This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Tan Chung Han here with me. Good morning, Han.
Good morning, good Melissa. Morning. And good morning to those listening right now. Thank you so much for kicking off the weekend. Well, almost. I'm getting ahead of myself, but thanks for tuning in anyways.
You still have another day. And you know, this is assuming that you're working a five-day work week.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Now, many people who either work shifts or work weekends or have Saturday as a half day as well. So, stay with us all the way till 10 o'clock today on The Morning Run. We'll bring you lots of news and analysis, including interviews that you don't want to miss today. And taking a look at some of the news that happened overnight, Han, this is, I think, an ongoing story from the beginning of the week. So the FBI in the US has revealed that a suspect package has been sent to a New York restaurant owned by Robert De Niro, the actor. So similar types of packages have been sent to senior public figures who are Trump or who are critics of Trump. And I believe this this is the eighth critic of President Trump that has received such a package this week.
Yeah, the other seven are Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, John Brennan, who's the former CIA director, Eric Holder, former Attorney General, and Maxine Waters. She is the California Democratic Congresswoman. So keep in mind that all these comes just a couple of weeks before that November midterm elections there.
And you're forgetting George Soros as well. He was the first person to receive a post box package in the post. He is a major Democratic donor, and it began on Monday, and we've been seeing, I think, every day there's been announcements or news headlines about people receiving suspect packages. So I guess we'll have to look at whether the authorities in the US are going to clamp down on this. Or do you remember the Unabomber incident?
Yeah. Well, so the FBI has actually launched a manhunt for whoever sent these packages. And, so again, we'll see what kind of ramifications this may have in the political sphere, obviously from an instance of security, because with De Niro, it was sent to his restaurant in New York City, right? And it was only thanks to a quick-thinking security guard who actually spotted the picture, due to the other news reports, and he was like, wait a minute, we kind of got a package that looked like that. So, yeah,
looks like quick-thinking, yeah, good, probably save some lives.
Yeah, it's something that has to be closely watched, like you said, and we'll certainly be doing that right here on The Morning Run.
And another piece of news, slightly, I guess, offbeat piece of news that caught my attention this morning was the fact that an artwork that had been created by an artificial intelligence program has been sold at auction for $432,000. This is the first piece of AI art to go under the hammer at a major auction house. This is Christie's had actually put this up for auction. And initially, Christie's had valued the piece or thought it was going to sell for about $7,000 to $10,000. Mm-hmm. It went for much higher, $432,000.
Yeah, see, I don't know how I feel about this, right?
Why not?
See, because very often when we talk about robots taking over our jobs, you kind of think of the more manual or more systematic jobs, and you're saying, oh, we humans, we still have our creativity. We have our art. They can't take that away from us. Nope. Well, AI here has actually done just that. In fact, commanded quite the nice pay package from that as well.
Okay, I know art is supposed to be subjective, but I don't really see I don't think it's all that nice looking. I mean, the aesthetic value for me is not there. I think what's happening here is the novelty factor, given that this is the first piece of art by an AI program to be auctioned. So, you want that kind of novelty factor, as opposed to looking at it thinking, I'm so inspired by this.
Oh my gosh, Melissa.
Art is subjective, though. It's all relative.
Well, see, there we go, right? And I mean, if you look at, say, Banksy's work as well, it's tremendously subjective. And, but what we do have here as a fact, now at least someone has seen enough value in this work of art produced by artificial intelligence. What does that mean for the human race?
Maybe,
doesn't sound good.
Maybe within our lifetimes, we might see AI taking over radio. Presenters,
yeah,
jobs. You never know.
Basically, everything really.
I could be Siri.
Yeah.
All right, coming up to 5 minutes past 6 o'clock. After this, we want to hear from you. We want to know how much food you throw out every day and what we can do about that. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep them coming in. We want to hear from you. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 610 right now. You're with Mel and Han on the morning run today. That was James Bay with The Passenger. And good morning to Robin, who says he doesn't know whether having AI replacing you guys will be a good idea, but he says he doesn't mind having my voice replacing Siri or on Waze.
Oh.
Thank you very much. Very sweet of you.
Hey, what about me then? You know, don't I get any love this Friday morning?
You can be, what's the Amazon one called? Is that?
I have no
okay,
idea.
Okay, all right then.
Well, Samsung has Bixby. And it's all female voices, though. No,
yes,
that...
because it's soothing to the ear, hun.
Wow, thanks a lot. I'm feeling the tremendous amount of sexism evident in the studio right now. I don't know
it's
how I feel about this.
It's only coming from me. Yeah. All right, tell us, come join our conversation this morning, 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We want to know how much food you throw out every day. So this is food that's gone bad, or food that's not eaten, or, you know, leftovers in the fridge. Food that could still be used and is good, but you just throw it out because it's gone bad. You haven't had a chance to eat it. Because I think this has come to our attention because Datuk Sri Saifuddin Nasution Ismail, the Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister, he said that based on a SW Corp study in Malaysia here, 3,000 tons of food items which are still considered good and safe for consumption, are thrown away each day. And if we didn't throw out those 3,000 tons, hun, the food can feed at least 2 million people.
Right. Now, is this food that's been cooked or probably raw food from like grocery stores, like raw food ingredients?
Yeah, I'm thinking that it could be, you know, a mixture of both. So looking at the study, apparently hypermarkets, retail operations like Tesco's and Aeon's and Maidin's, they all have a kind of food bank program. They're working with the government for this. So I'm thinking things like, you know, things that go bad or perishable goods like breads, you know, after a certain best buy date, you can't sell it anymore. Mm-hmm. Produce and even, you know, restaurants that cook in bulk, right? And you don't have, so I can imagine hotels probably, breakfast, lunch, buffets and all that.
Yeah. So this is not a new phenomenon, right? If you look in the States, for example, this is a problem that many people have highlighted for years now. That's why, you know, there's such a big push towards like farmers markets and community markets and such, right? The idea is that because consumers tend to go for these geometrically perfect, cosmetically perfect produce.
Like ugly fruits. They don't want that. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, they don't want off-colored ones, or they don't want anything that has the slightest resemblance of a bruise on there. And so because of that, you know, these supermarkets are adapting to that behavior and having to chuck these out. Why? Because at the end of the day, customers don't want to buy them. Now, besides the appearance or of the individual produce, there's also this research about how consumers who walk into these stores are less inclined to buy these produce items if they're not in this like perfect pyramid, you know.
Like visually, like aesthetically pleasing,
exactly,
in display.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, like, in other words, if let's say like there's a big sell-off in strawberries and there's only left like 1-2 kota or whatever, they won't touch it, right? Unless if it's a big mountain, yeah, they've got less of a problem reaching and grabbing for their box of strawberries.
The psychological, you know, behavioral economics tells you that it's because you don't want what no one else has touched, right?
Right.
You'd be like, well, why did no one buy this? I don't want to buy it. I don't want to be the sucker who buys it, right? So why not?
It's kind of like my love life right now. Everyone's like, I ain't going to touch this 35-year-old, you know, single man.
Just a hint of desperation.
Okay, expired goods. Yeah, I'm not going to touch the guy. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, so that's the idea. So unfortunately, this is a problem that was created by consumers because of our habits, because of our higher spending power, and because of our pickiness when it comes to what our produce or food should look like.
Okay, so then what do we do about it, right? Because really, it's a problem that can be very easily solved with a change of mindset. And I have to tell you, in asking the question of how much food do we throw out every day, I am so guilty of this because I buy takeout a lot, and sometimes the portions are too big. And because we lead very busy lives, the leftovers stay in the fridge for a really long time. At the end of the week, you kind of chuck out a whole bunch of food, produce included, because you haven't had time to cook it, right? So vegetables that have gone bad in your fridge. And I'm wondering how I can personally not have so much wastage at the end of the month. I really don't know.
All right, so one of the things these experts have said, well, instead of buying in bulk, which contributes to this wastage, mm-hmm. buy more frequently. So that's why the rise of convenience stores, the rise of these little, you know, uncle auntie produce stores, you know, in your neighborhoods, those are the ones you should frequent. Why? You know, there's lesser stock. And then hopefully the community, you know, it is enough for the community around them. So that's the idea. Again, going back to the whole farmer's market idea thing.
Right.
So that's one. Another,
do you do that though?
No. Well, see, for me, being the hopelessly single 35-year-old that I am,
Maggie doesn't count.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? So I eat out all the time. Easily 99% of my meals, 99.9% of my meals are takeaways. So I just buy what I need, finish the portion. I mean, helps that I've got a bigger belly than others. And I just finish it and I'm done. Like, so there's less wastage there, as opposed to buying the raw materials, trying to aga how much I need for the week, and then possibly, you know, much of that going to waste.
Well, maybe we can adopt something like what France is doing. France has become the first country in the world to ban supermarkets from throwing away or destroying unsold food, forcing them instead to donate it to charities and food banks. Let's come back and take a look at other stories in the news, how to move away from this yes men mentality that we always have here in Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Melissa and Han here with you on The Morning Run, 6:21 right now. Young Blood by The Naked and Famous. I could make a joke about how we're neither, but I'm not, because this is a classy show, Han. Very classy show. All right. Let's take a look at some messages that have come in. We have Gun on WhatsApp, who says to you, Han, that he or she, I can't tell, would gladly have you, Han, navigating his or her directions while she or him or he drives.
Recalculating.
Oh, yeah.
Turn right.
Actually, that's not bad. I wouldn't mind hearing that. Actually.
You have reached your destination.
Yeah.
You are lost, hopelessly, in life. Get a life. That's terrible.
We also have Ro on WhatsApp weighing in on the conversation a little bit earlier about, you know, how much food we waste. Apparently, we throw out some 3,000 tons of food items every day, most of which are still very good and still safe to consume. Ro on WhatsApp has said that he grew up with parents who didn't waste, so he doesn't waste. Cafes like Ted Boy donate their leftovers and also offer bread at a discount. Tommy LeBaker also gives away some of the bread in the evening. So I think it's quite interesting. I have to say, though, I'm two minds about the not eating everything on your plate, because I grew up with parents like that too. And I have to say, you know, in this day and age where you eat out a lot and the portions are big, yeah, sometimes you just cannot do that. It's different growing up at home where you can, you know, don't take more than you intend to eat. That's different. Whereas when you order out, the portions are, you know, for two sometimes.
Yeah, so that's why I appreciate my favorite restaurants are ones whereby they give smaller portions, or, you know, your good old chat fun place, like, you know, you can't go wrong with that, right? Just take what you need, eat what's on your plate, and then you can move on. Because, you know, you can always hear that nagging voice of your parents in your head, right? Saying, think of the starving children in Africa, you know, how can you waste food here?
Yes,
you
know, yeah, we've all gotten that from our Asian parents, haven't we? All right, well, moving on to the issue of a comment made by the Chief Justice. So we're looking this morning at the idea of yes men. And the idea really is about whether our society encourages dissent. Now, the Chief Justice, Tan Sri Richard Malanjum, he has ordered judges to be brave in delivering their judgments, including in giving dissenting views. So he says that by dissenting, it encourages independence of thought and paves the way for healthy development of the law in the future. So he's trying to say, let's not have yes men in Malaysia Baru. Mm. And the question is, what will it take, Han, for us to move away from this yes man mentality?
Yeah, it's got to require an entire paradigm shift here, though. I mean, in principle, this sounds great, but in reality, you know, we have seen how, you know, I mean, such ambitions are just curtailed by vested interests, etc., right? Mm-hmm. And it's not just something that, you know, is... I mean, it's not something that just BN is guilty of. I mean, so for example, we have seen recently with the entire DAP debacle with some of their members getting datukships and whatnot. And then there's a whole public outcry about how, well, you know, you shouldn't have taken them to begin with. Well, then guess what? You had Anthony Locke, who was then towing the party line and said, you guys need to just... basically shut it, okay, and don't make a mess of it, and toe the party line. We have seen how the likes of, say, Tan Seng Yao, who didn't toe the party line on 1MDB in the lead up to GE14, even though he served his constituency for multiple terms, well, he was dropped from the candidate list, right? So it's something that seems to be you know, very evident here in Malaysia across the political divide, right, across various stratas in society, and it's going to take a monumental shift to actually overcome that.
Well, okay. So for me, the yes man mentality comes from a system of patronage, right? The patronage system. So if you kowtow to a certain person with political power or just influence, you will then get some trickle down benefit from that. But if we were to, I guess, stop thinking that way and, you know, and dismantle this patronage system, it will make it difficult for that kind of handing out of goodies or influence. You're right that it's tough, but I do think it begins with each like individual person, because the idea that, you know, oh, we shouldn't dissent from this herd mentality. If everyone's saying yes, I'm just going to say yes too. It boils down with this idea that, look, it's okay to have a differing opinion and we're not going to get penalized for it.
Right. And again, in principle, I certainly welcome that, right? But I'm trying to focus on the reality side of it. I mean, say for a business organization, right? Now, BFM, or, you know, you listening right now, think about your company, right? If let's say you've got, you know, a couple of fellow colleagues who are just out there totally going against the grain,
like contrarian, but for the sake of being contrarian, well, or for not agreeing for a reason?
I mean, motives aside, right? They are contrarian, okay, whether justified or not, right? But they are contrarian. They are certainly going against the grain. It takes a tremendous amount of resources, not just mentally, but also, you know, emotionally, to try and accommodate that, right? As opposed to having everyone be more, dare I say, compliant, and I'm using air quotes there, and you just keep the show running along, right? So it's a fine balancing act. So again, I'm thinking there's the principle of it, the ideal principle versus the practicality of it.
Well, the idea also, I think, is how, I guess it also, yeah, precisely what you're trying to say in terms of penalizing or punishing people who have dissenting views, right? So if as a collective, we don't celebrate the fact that we have differences of opinion, this is something really, you know, nuanced when it comes to first world mindsets, right? We, you know, Malaysia Baru, let's move on. Let's be okay with people who have differing opinions. And I see this on social media. I see this on our WhatsApp interactions sometimes, that, you know, if someone in a group WhatsApp chat, for instance, has something, you know, different to say, that person gets shut down completely and almost immediately. On Twitter, you see the kind of cyberbullying and, you know, the backlash that people have about comments that they don't agree with. It you may not agree with it, but it's okay that someone else doesn't share your opinion, right?
Yeah, and I think a common thing that we can agree on is that, I mean, ultimately the tone, right? It's got to be conveyed in a respectful tone, these differing opinions. But you're absolutely right. You know, it may not be formal sanctions whereby someone is officially reprimanded, but sometimes it's informal sanctions, i.e. the cyberbullying, or even in the workplace when you have cliques, right? Uh-huh. Oh, that person is a deviant. We're not going to hang out with them, you know. We're going to move over to our side and have lunch away from these guys.
What would you do if you were a boss, Hun, and you had, you know, people, how would you recognize that you have yes men around you or yes women?
Well, I mean,
again, and disincentivize them to be yes men. Yeah, all right, well, let's think about that and come back after the 6:30 news bulletin. We have Sabrina Magdalene at the mic next on BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run. Rain is Falling by Electric Light Orchestra, ELO there. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han this morning, 6:40 right now. And on our discussion a little bit earlier about food wastage, we have Maynard on WhatsApp weighing in saying that I come from a culinary background, and having seen the huge amount of waste hotels and restaurants produce, I make an effort to buy those clearance discounted produce that's been cut and packed. It's cheap, and since I started backyard farming, I've realized the intense effort to cultivate anything at and the cost of it. So I buy what I need and only buy when the fridge is or the pantry is empty. But I still have some wastage. It's minimal, and the rest goes to compost.
Yeah, backyard farming. I think that's farming. Jeez. Anyways, I've heard it's very, very therapeutic. I've got a couple of family friends who do that, and yeah, I might actually try taking that up when I find the time.
I think that's a really good point. You know, there is so much cost and effort that goes into farming, and we don't see it because of the commercialization of produce. So good on you, Maynard. We want to know how much food you waste every day and how you're minimizing food wastage. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Yeah, Mr. Tan has also WhatsApped in saying that he notices the meaningless overgiving during festive seasons, being one of the culprits. Think mooncakes with extravagant packaging. And I must say, there is a lot of truth to that, though.
The amount of plastic that goes into it.
And especially during Chinese New Year, right? In the lead up to Chinese New Year, oh my word. Like, we get so much, so many oranges, right? It's just vitamin C overload, though. Like, the whole office just smells of citrus.
It's not a bad smell, you know, rather than, say, body odor. But that's another matter altogether. I have to say, though, it's not limited to just Chinese New Year Mooncake Festival.
Yeah.
You know, Ramadan, with those all-you-can-eat buffets for Buka Puasa, you see tables laden with food and people hungrier, and the eyes hungrier than the stomach, they say, right? Yeah. So.
But then there's a whole FOMO thing, right? Because then if, you know, everyone else is giving and then you don't give, then, you know, there's this whole pressure to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I think so. That's what's driving all this wastage, right? Keeping up with the Joneses, not in terms of just giving food packages come festive seasons, but it's also keeping up with the Joneses, you know, in terms of, you know, what you buy or what you're seen buying at the grocery store. You know, that's why grocery stores are pressured to overstock just to make things look nice.
Nicer. Well, we have Nick Hasyudin weighing in on Twitter with regards to our conversation about whether the Malaysians society encourages yes man mentality. Nick Hasyudin said that one can't be independent if one wants to maintain or to maintain a particular position. If he or she is okay of losing it, then it's easier to maintain views based on belief or principle. I'm discouraged to hear this, because I'm hoping that we're going to move away from this. This may be the reality right now, Nick Hasyudin, but, you know, hopefully that we can move away from this kind of mentality of the patronage system of you have to believe in a certain way, you have to kowtow to certain group of people just for you to maintain your position.
Right. You know, I'm actually more inclined to believe Nick Hasyudin here, because unfortunately that's the reality
that we see.
That's
the truth on the ground right
now.
Yeah,
you know, because where do you draw the line between holding those ideals versus the efficiency when it comes to running any organization? And if you need that efficiency, you know, it requires so much more resources to accommodate these dissenting voices and the kind of deviance that perhaps should be permissible in this Malaysia Baru.
Well, moving on to a comment made by Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, who made a remark yesterday that got tongues wagging all over. He said that the civil service under Pakatan Harapan is now not as efficient, and he explained that it's currently manned by more junior staff members. So, okay, let's kind of put this into perspective, right? Granted, it was probably an offhand remark, you know, Tun makes these kind of off-the-cuff remarks. But does this not smell of ageism, don't you think?
Yeah, look, this is based on the assumption that the older folks, no offense if you're perhaps in, or you lay claim to that label.
Well,
right?
Okay, but so everyone under Tun is considered younger, la, junior, yeah, la, technically, right? He's at 93, everyone is considered junior staff for
right,
him.
Exactly. But broadly speaking, right, I'm guessing what the Prime Minister means by this is that, you know, the older folk have paid their dues, they have done the groundwork, you know, that's why they're moving up. So that's based on the assumption that those who are in seniority, right, right now, at least in the civil service, they got there because they have paid their dues, I would think.
Paid their dues meaning what? Just stayed in the office?
Yeah.
Like, stayed in the job for that long?
So that's a stereotype, right? You know, again, I'm trying to get into the head of that 93-year-old man there. So I'm guessing that's the basis, that's a rationale right. for such comments that, oh, younger ones, less efficient, older ones... perhaps, you know, they've been around the block, they know how it's done.
Yeah, and I think what we should do is make the distinction between efficiency and experience, right? Mm. So yes, I think I'd agree with him in some respect that perhaps in terms of efficiency, because they don't have that wealth of experience to make the learning curve easier, right? So and you see this with the way Tun Dr. Mahathir is managing his administration with bringing in the Council of Eminent Persons. He's bringing in all this wealth of experience, all the elders, so to speak, right? So you can learn from what they have learned over the decades. But whether or not the junior staff, to quote him, are less efficient, I think I am inclined to disagree there, because that for me may not have hit the mark, in terms of his comment.
Yeah, you know, because you want that healthy mix of vigor and that idealism that perhaps the younger ones have, that perhaps
and dissenting views, like no yes men.
Yeah, and you know, that edge perhaps has ebbed with time, with experience. You know, like Nick Hazuddin says, you know, if you want to maintain in that position, right, if you want to remain in that job scope, well, you kind of got to keep your head down and just do the work, and you know, not be so outspoken all the time. I'm totally reading between the lines.
Yeah,
that Nick Hazuddin.
Trying to paraphrase both what Nick Hazuddin is saying and also what Tun Dr. Mahathir is saying. But we want to hear from you. Tell us what you think. Do you agree with Tun Dr. Mahathir's remark that the civil service under Pakatan Harapan is not as efficient because it's currently manned by more junior staff? 018-789-8899 is our WhatsApp number, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:52 right now. This is The Morning Run, Melissa and Hutt here with you. That was Bob Marley and the Wailers with Could You Be Loved. Thank you so much, guys, for your messages this morning. 018-789-8899. That's the number to WhatsApp into. And our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio. Let's take a look at some of the tweets that have come in. Now, I'm looking at Hiswani Hassan, who is a regular tweeter for this show. And he says that age is sometimes not the best indicator of experience and efficiency or effectiveness. Some elders may have the wrong experience. Of course, he was responding to our question we put out there to ask you whether you agree with what Tun Dr. Mahathir is saying, that the Pakatan Harapan government, the civil service under the Pakatan Harapan administration is not as experienced because it's manned by more junior staff.
Right, and Rex Connect also WhatsApped in, got a different take on this, saying that Tun Dr. Mahathir is trying to set the bar higher. The younger staff should take it as a challenge rather than be offended. The old man really knows how to rile up these sensitive younger folks. Sensitive younger folks. Is that a stereotype there?
Maybe. You mean snowflakes? Yeah, kind of. All right, well, let's take a look at a comment made by Ro on WhatsApp. Compared to Dr. M, an 80-year-old minister is junior. So that's a good point. But frankly, Ro says, I disagree. I think the new wave of younger ministers are dynamic, active, and show fabulous initiative. Perhaps he meant less experienced, but no less efficient.
Right. And we've got KK that, once again, continuing with this theme of scoring the current cabinet and the current government, saying that most of the ministers and deputies from DAP and Amanah are doing a commendable job. As for the other coalition parties, their ministers and deputies need to buck up, except for Muhyiddin and Azmin, whom KK believes are doing an okay job. This is from Kyung.
An okay job. I think, right. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I think we have Darren Goh on WhatsApp as well, saying the current Pakatan Harapan government is more junior by physical age or junior by being in the government position. So he's, I guess, trying to read between the lines. What does Tun M mean here? Is he saying just because they don't have experience by being in government? So I think let's make the distinction. So what Tun M said, and if I were to quote him directly, he's talking about the civil service under the Pakatan Harapan Urban Administration. So technically, the civil service hasn't changed, has it?
Right.
So let me just read very quickly the things that he said. Essentially, he's saying that they've had to remove... I'm paraphrasing here, but they've had to remove a whole host of older or more senior civil service members under the previous administration, and now all that's left is more junior staff. So to quote him, I'm using his direct, it's verbatim from Tun Dr. Mahathir. So we have got rid of many of them. So the government is now staffed by very junior people, and junior people naturally are not as efficient as the senior people.
Yeah, I don't know what I feel about that, though. I mean, again, you know...
So this is civil service, not the politicians.
Yeah, well, I think what we can all agree on is that hopefully, you know, whether they are efficient or not, these civil service that remain, that they can really take up this challenge and prove to Dr. Mahathir wrong and ultimately serve this Malaysia Baru to the best of their capabilities.
So you're like, this is tough love. I'm going to rise to the occasion. We were talking about this the other day, weren't we? That, you know, sometimes... Dr. Mahathir adopts that Asian dad parenting style.
You mean Asian grandpa? Like
where he tells you, you're not good enough, that A is not good enough, I want an A plus. We have on WhatsApp here a message saying that this person agrees with what Dr. Mahathir, this person thinks what Dr. Mahathir means is that most of the older civil servants have been used to the ways of the previous corrupt government and aren't contributing positively or are even trying to sabotage the Pakatan Harapan government. So the junior ones, being less experienced, are the ones doing their part.
Well, I think that's a bit of a creative interpretation, though, because again, quoting what Tun Dr. Mahathir said, and I quote, junior people naturally are not as efficient as the senior people.
Are naturally not?
That's what the Malay male quoted to Dr. Mahathir is saying. Naturally are not as efficient.
Okay, well, keep them coming, guys. We love to hear what you think this morning. Do you agree with what Tun Dr. Mahathir says? Or do you think it just has a smidgen of ageism there? We have Always Look Positive on Twitter, or his handle is at MichaelKK59, saying there is a fine line in it. Interpersonal skills speaks. If the boss is wrong, please refer to the first rules. All right, keep them coming in, 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be coming back with the 7 o'clock news bulletin after this, so stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.